Hello, you are listening to the Burstball Scottish Football Podcast with me, your host, Johnny Clark. Well, what a weekend that was, and what a Super Sunday it turned out to be. Hearts losing 3-0 to Celtic, and Aberdeen beating Rangers. I think not too many people seen that one coming, but a stunning day for Dons fans. Anyway, we'll start with the former of those two games once I've introduced the two guests. Killy Cal.
Hello, Johnny. Thank you for having me on the podcast once again, and I'm delighted to talk up the excellent weekend of action all across Scotland.
Yeah, you'll be talking about Kilmarnock later on, and their draw with Accies on Saturday, and we've also got Tom.
Yeah, hi Johnny, pleasure to be here.
So, yep, no Old Firm today, despite the big day for the Old Firm. I'm going to assume that there's been too much drink had on this sunny Sunday in October. There's no sort of bias, because I remember last time Celtic won, I think Celtic maybe beat Rangers, and there's about three Celtic fans on the podcast, so we're being accused from all corners of being horrible bias scum. So just to
is
level
it just
out.
Me though to butt in there, Johnny, that obviously I know Celtic won today, but the effort from these said Old Firm fans is appalling. They only turn up in the big games when they're doing well. Where's the Rangers fans? See when Celtic get beat, where are they? They're never on it. See when Kilmarnock was shite, which was the vast majority of Burstball history, I was still on the podcast every week. And I'm, even though at least we'll call it as it is, and no bias here, but it's a shame that neither Celtic, Rangers or Aberdeen fans are on the podcast this evening.
Yeah, indeed. We just have the opinions of a Dundee United and a Kilmarnock fan. I mean, the two teams did play this weekend, and we can obviously offer unbiased coverage of today's action, which we all did watch the both games. So, you know, there's positives. And as you say regularly, Callum, the podcast is cleaner environment without the Old Firm.
Yes.
So having said that, let's talk about the Old Firm. Celtic 3, Hearts 0. The game-changing decision, the penalty decision, we'll start with that. What were your thoughts, Tom?
A bit soft. I do agree with Levine when he said the game changed on it. Quite disappointed in Christie. I don't want to say it, but he's not that sort of player. I don't like diving. I don't think anyone does it. I'm not those people that, even if one of my players, I absolutely hate it. I wouldn't go home happy if we won a game on it, and I would be fairly disappointed in Christie as a Celtic fan.
You wouldn't go home happy if your team won a cup semi-final and your player had dived?
Not particularly. I must admit, I really, really don't like it.
Killy Cal, does diving make you miserable as well?
Oh, well, of course not, given that I stick up for divers, allegedly.
Of course.
The last few weeks, and I absolutely love diving. I thought that the penalty was soft, but I thought it still was a penalty. I mean, the Hearts boys, he's an idiot. I know it's all cliche, or don't give the referee the option, but like, why is he even trying to make a tackle there? He's going nowhere. I actually thought it was a penalty. It is soft, but it's one of those, if it's anywhere else in the park, the free kick's given, there's no qualms with it. It's stupid to do that in a semi-final and leave your foot trailing, especially with somebody like Christie, who is get a kind of reputation before he kind of, you know, maybe getting down easier, making the most of things. But I thought it was a penalty and he was entitled to get down. More than anything, it was just absolute stupidity for the Hearts player in that moment in time. And the minute that penalty was given, you just, well, me anyway, I knew that the game was got to be over. But I just knew that. I knew that Hearts would not come back for that. And it was just a kind of routine victory for Celtic from there on in.
And obviously the second moment that kind of changes the game is Bobby's Lamal, as the Hearts fans call him, is kind of howler. I think there's defenders slightly in the way of it, to be fair to him, but it's a shocker, really. And then I think it's already over the goal line by the time he spoons it out. I'm not actually sure who the goal's gone to, but it looked like to me on the replay that it was already cross line for Forrest to put it in. It's just such an unfortunate timing for him, isn't it? Because, I mean, he's been so solid so far this season. Tom?
I do sympathise with him. It did look slightly trickier upon second viewing. I think, firstly, you just think, oh no, he's had an absolute shocker. Second time, there was deflection, there was people in his way. But it does seem just a wee bit typical. The keeper making a mistake against Celtic, and despite having an absolutely brilliant start to his career in Scotland.
Do you think that it was the penalty decision that actually changed the game? That you, I know you said you agreed with Levine, Tom, but there was obviously Naismith's injury. Callum in the first half, that's a massive blow. I mean, to a Hearts team that have already got a mounting injury problems already.
No, definitely, Johnny. I think that Stephen Naismith is absolutely critical to what Hearts are, and I think that he's the difference. When Hearts are good, it's Stephen Naismith. I think that he, because I've said it before, and I know if any Hearts fans will be listening, I think I'll get some kind of agenda against them, but I don't particularly think that they've had a good start to the season, a good solid start to the season, but they've not really been tested as much as other clubs in this run in, and we'll soon find out obviously with Edinburgh Derby and stuff coming up. But I think Stephen Naismith is something that gives you obviously something a bit different. I think that he's comfortably, he's certainly the best player in the league out with Old Firm. There's absolutely no doubt about that for me. I think he's a wonderful talent, and he's a talisman at Hearts, and when he goes off injured in the first half, it's, the writing was really on the wall for there, even though it was a penalty that swayed it. But I mean, when your main man goes off, and who do you look to in the park, you know what I mean? There's no obvious leaders there for them to look to. Stephen McLean gets a captaincy after that, but he's not got the same impact as Naismith, and I just thought that with him going off, it was just always got to be very difficult for Hearts, which was a shame considering the occasion, and the crowd at Murrayfield was phenomenal, and fair play to all the Hearts fans that went, but it's just a shame that things did seem to kind of go against them in the day, because I really, really did fancy them to take Celtic to extra time at least.
And a third thing that I'll chuck out there that changed the game, and this was one that's, to Celtic's credit, it's Ryan Christie. He was really, really impressive in that second half, Tom, wasn't he?
Yeah, pretty stunning goal as well. Admittedly, I've watched extended highlights, but not the full game. I think it is just, from a sort of wider perspective, it's quite nice to see him doing well. It was one of Aberdeen's more important players in the time he spent there. Maybe just felt he maybe wasn't good enough to make the step up to being a regular at Celtic. But if he can keep putting in performances like he did today, he might just put stick a claim into a side that hasn't actually been very good this season. It might, or probably could do with a bit of added impetus to it.
And just lastly on this first semi-final, Stephen McLean, obviously, as you mentioned a minute ago, Callum, he got the captain's armband, and he decided he would just grope Aboué Kouassi during the game. What are your thoughts on that? Is it, what's happening with his Hearts armband? It just seems to make an animal of good men.
there's obviously some kind of conjured Levine spirit in that armband somewhere, evidently. But no, it's just something ridiculous, really, isn't it? No, I'm not going to lie, it's shocking, it shouldn't happen, but I do find stuff like that quite amusing in football, but there's not much I can really say about it. I just thought it was pretty ridiculous, but kind of dinosaurs would defend them, but it's just McLean showing his experience there and stuff, you know. And, but I don't know, it's a very, very bizarre situation.
Enjoyable things in football, diving and Stephen McLean grabbing people's balls during the match. Any other points you would want to make on the
man.
What's that?
No, I'm just like when I think they said in between us, sorry, it doesn't matter.
Any other points on the first semi-final before we move on to arguably the result of the weekend.
No, just well done to Celtic for a comfortable victory.
Fantastic. Well done to Celtic. Yep, congratulations to Celtic from all at the first ball. We move on and we give our congratulations to Aberdeen now. Where do we even start with this? It was, to be honest, not the most lively of first halves. It won't be my thoughts that you hear here, but I thought Sadiq started the game quite well. And it was quite an interesting matchup in the first half. But Rangers didn't really create much at all throughout the 90 minutes, really, did they, Tom?
No. Sadiq's an odd one. As you said, he wasn't as bad as maybe some might have expected, given he seems like a very much a last resort. And there was a lot of talk that they would maybe field one of their creative midfielders or wingers in his role, in the absence of Morelos and Lafferty. But he didn't look too bad, but how he is a registered Roma player, a team that got to the Champions League semi-final last year, is beyond my imagination. He looks like, if he was at Aberdeen, would he get much more game time? I don't think so. That probably goes for most teams in the league. I wouldn't see him making much of an impact.
You're saying he's Roma's Sam Cosgrove? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah. You're putting words into my mouth, Johnny, yes.
In terms of the actual day for Aberdeen, I thought Logan and Lowe that came on as well for the injured Considine were both absolutely excellent in an Aberdeen team that got kind of back to basics and defended really, really well, Callum.
100%, Johnny. Glad you mentioned Lowe. I was especially impressed with him. I thought he had an excellent afternoon. And here's one thing that you should record me saying, because I don't say it very often, but I thought McInnes got his tactics absolutely spot on the day, and he really did show how good a manager he can be, because I'm not going to lie, I really did think Rangers would win comfortably today, but McInnes just got it sorted, and as you say, it was just going back to basics. I thought the frantic start, and then it kind of died out a bit, and fair play to Shinny, because to get that booking after a couple of minutes, 3 minutes or whatever it was, I mean, and the kind of player Shinny is, for him to keep his discipline for the remainder of the game was testament to him, and obviously McInnes's his management. But I thought Aberdeen were great, and I think there was only one kind of period in the second half, and even that, Rangers still weren't like creating any chances, but there was that period where Aberdeen couldn't really get out their kind of penalty area, and Rangers where it was kind of attack after attack, but they were only getting to the byline and cutting it back, and there was always an Aberdeen boy there to block it or whatever. So no, I thought our tactics were brilliant, it wasn't one of those games. Usually when you beat one of the Old Firm, your keeper usually has a great quality game, but I can't really remember Joe Lewis really having to make a significant save. And I thought Aberdeen were thoroughly deserving of their victory, and I'm buzzing for them. I'm really happy for Matt and Ryan, who no doubt have enjoyed their night, because there's nothing better than that.
And in terms of the goal scorer, just as you said there, it can't get any better. Lewis Ferguson, son of, nephew of Barry, and son of Duncan, am I right?
No, Derek.
Derek, sorry. So that is, you probably couldn't handpick a better goal scorer as an Aberdeen fan. Obviously Ferguson scored it at Burnley as well. He's turned into a bit of a big game player, and that's maybe something that Aberdeen are needing a bit more of, Tom.
Yeah. He's got all the potential to do so. Saw that in his overhead kick against Burnley. And I've said it before, and I'd imagine people are probably getting tired of saying it, but they lost quite a lot in the summer with McLean and Christie leaving. And Ferguson could potentially, whilst not being identical to either of them, could maybe go some way in stepping up and replacing McLean Christie.
And how much will the lack of creativity from Rangers be a worry? Because this isn't really a new thing, is it? I mean, you watched Rangers away at Livingston, it was very similar to that. I mean, they had a lot of balls into the box. Tavernier's delivery seems to be degrading about every game I watch him. I mean, some of his deliveries towards the end after Aberdeen scored were absolutely woeful. And it just did seem to be a case of, right, we're losing, what do we do? Just punt balls into the box. And there wasn't really creativity before that. I mentioned that Lewis Bailey had a save to make. And it's been like that in a few games away from Ibrox this season. Is it, how much of a worry do you think that is for Gerard, Gal?
I think that today was always going to be very difficult with the striking situation where so Morelos been suspended, Lafferty Cup tied, and evidently, obviously, why Sadiq played. But it was always going to be difficult. And I think that did come into it because we're piling balls into the box and it was just bread and butter stuff for Aberdeen, you know, and there was no real kind of plan B, and I don't know, I think it is concerning. I think that Rangers are still comfortably better than they ever were if they've come back up. But it does just, I don't know. I think Kent is one of the only ones today that gets past marks. At least he was trying something different, and he can come inside, he can hit the byline, you know what I mean? He was mixing it up a bit, but other than that, it was very just kind of, I mean, you could read Rangers, just, they were so easy to read today. And I think it is concerning, and like, I'm really looking forward to our game with them on Wednesday night, because I've definitely got a feeling that we can go there and get a result. But I thought that before the game anyway, but I think that after what I seen the Rangers today and a kind of Steven Gerrard's first semi-final, but I was really disappointed with the lack of fight, and it just, as I say, it was just really basic stuff. And even when they went down 1-0, any old firm team that goes down 1-0 in a semi-final, especially that late on, it's got to be backs against the wall for the rest of the game, and Aberdeen saw the game out comfortably.
And you mentioned Kelly there. Unless there's anything else that you'd like to mention, Tom or Callum, we'll move on to Kilmarnock's draw with Hamilton on Saturday.
Did we touch on Sadiq's dive as
well? Oh, we didn't actually. I've got that written down, but we didn't mention it. Sadiq, actually, I've only seen him play once. It was for Rangers 20s against Falkirk in the Iron Brew Cup, and he got booked for diving in the first half of that game as well, and it was nearly as bad as a dive as that. Absolutely woeful dive, and he's 6'7". He's probably one of the only strikers I've also seen be pocketed by Falkirk's centre-halves this season. But he went down in stages that day, and that was one of the worst dives I've seen in a long time, to be fair. Nobody claiming that was a penalty at all.
No, well, I think that.
But you like divers.
Of course I love divers, and he disgraced the diving industry with that. To be fair, today. No, tell you who did Tavernier with that one at the end. That was absolutely embarrassing when the ball breaks out in the left and he's waiting to challenge, and Aberdeen ball pulls out and he dives. But no, Sadiq's one. That diving something that's always got to be about in the game, and there's no, obviously we can condemn it all we want, but it's always got to be there, right? And the difference being, right, is obviously you dive or do you go down easy to gain an advantage when you've got nothing else to do, or you're expecting a challenger out in the byline. But why the hell does he go down there? He's past the keeper. All he has to do is he can slide it away. So that's just, it's cheating anyway. But that's even worse. That's just him trying to get Joe Lewis sent off. I mean, if there's any kind of, I don't know, scale and kind of plastic morals amongst diving, then he's lowest of the low. You know, what I mean? It wasn't like he went to get past the fullback and made the most of it. He's past the keeper, and all he has to do is slide it into the net, and he goes down because he's just wanting to get the keeper sent off, which I think is, it's just embarrassing. And and I mean, the problems up front were evident all day, and I mean, if that's what your main striker's doing, then there's something seriously wrong. And I don't know, if I were a Rangers fan, I'd be absolutely seething with that, because it's easier to just try and slide the ball in at the back of the net, but nah, he goes down for the penalty, which is just pathetic.
Not only is he a cheat, but he's an idiot as well, is what you're saying.
Yes, something to that degree, yep.
Unless he was just not confident of scoring, so unconfident he decided, rather than make him a fool of myself, miss an opening goal, even if I get booked, I look like less of a fool.
If he's thinking that, then why is he playing as a striker for Rangers if he's not confident of scoring an open goal?
What I can think of there when Tom came out with that theory is that gif with Alan for The Hangover, when like he's sitting when all the theories are going through his head and you see all the question marks and all that, just sitting going past Joe Lewis thinking, alright, we'll do this, we'll do that. If MD's familiar with that gif, that's all I could get with it. But we were touching Alan McGregor, if there's anything to talk about there. I thought his antics again were pretty embarrassing.
What, is this in the first half with Mackay Stephen?
I just think that McGregor is doing something like this every week, and it's just this plastic hard man that I can't stick. I hate it, particularly with football players. And Gary Mackay Stevens literally laughing when he's dribbling because it's a joke. You know what I mean? Like, we all know it's either offside or the foul's been given, and McGregor's just been a prat, and he's doing it week in, week out. I thought last week with Mikel Miller at the Hamilton game, when Mikel Miller comes in, he gets past the Rangers boy and then he hits that pathetic shot wide. But Alan McGregor's diving at 2 feet in there. Like, it's nobody's speaking about this. It's every single week something's coming out. And I don't know if he's ever going to get punished for it. I'm not saying Mackay Stephen didn't make the most of it at the time, but I just thought there's absolutely no need for it, and something that kind of infuriates me. As I say, it's just that plastic hard man mentality that I can't stick.
As you say, he's obviously the big one. Was what, a proper lash out, was at Celtic Park, wasn't it? And I still can't figure out how he didn't get suspended for that. I mean, what are the rules here? He's just literally blasted a guy, the ball's absolutely nowhere near, and he's just booted him, and the guy's on the floor. And I don't know. I'm totally at a loss with the SFA's, whatever you call it, where the referral system, because they've genuinely, it's like drawing numbers out of a hat. And then you'll know, obviously, having been a Kilmarnock fan, being a Kilmarnock fan, not having been one, the mess that they've made this season, it's been laughable. So I wouldn't on him getting a ban that he deserves anytime soon. I'll probably do nothing in a couple of weeks and get banned for it.
I know, and see what I would like to reiterate here, in case any Rangers fans are listening and thinking, oh, it's not even that I'm wanting what he done the day. Like, I don't even think that there's anything deserving of kind of any retrospective action out of the day. It's no, but it's just, what's the guy's problem? It's just every week he's just been an absolute tosser, just for absolutely no reason. Like, it's just that I really kind of stick that side of football at times, and you're thinking the referees have got to wise up to it at some point. It's just, he's literally going out his way every week to hurt somebody, and just infuriates me, it really does. And as I said, I know Mackay Stephen made the most of it today, but I mean, there was no need for that action. Like, when leaning with his elbow to when Mackay Stephen's having a laugh, just dribbling with the ball, it's just pathetic. And I don't know. But for as much as the guy's an excellent goalkeeper, he's just, his attitude stinks.
Right, let's talk about something else that stinks, Callum. A 1-1 draw at home to Hamilton Accies. How was that yesterday?
Oh, very much stinking, I would have to say. No, credit to Accies. I mean, there's a lot of people coming out after it and raging and saying, oh, Hamilton are this and that, but I've absolutely got no qualms whatsoever about how they go about getting their business. It's no fun me or anybody else to tell people how they should and shouldn't play football. I don't even like saying that, because it wasn't, obviously you've seen a couple of incidents, and Hamilton have always been a kind of hardy team, but I thought at times our tactics were brilliant, and they totally I just thought they really did. They worked extremely hard yesterday, pressed the ball in the right areas, but the main thing was they isolated our fullbacks. O'Donnell and Taylor are usually they're the kind of heartbeat of your team and how we play, but they totally debunked that yesterday and really stopped the guys for getting any real grip of the game. And I just thought Aki's were thoroughly deserving of our point, and it was a very, very frustrating afternoon. I think the big thing though, even though we're saying about the fullbacks, O'Donnell not having Chris Burke in front of him, and obviously Greg Taylor not having Jones, definitely did have an impact. Just with the kind of chemistry. But I've got absolutely no qualms about the result. I thought it was Hamilton were well worthy of their point, and they obviously had opportunities to nick it, but so did we. But the main thing was just frustration. But obviously the one thing that I'll put on, I thought the tackle for Darren McKinnon was really poor, and I knew at the time that it was a bad one. Obviously they showed it in sports scene. That's a guy again just getting intentionally hurt somebody. I don't condone that. I'm all for hard tackles and hard but fair tackles and pressing and really kind of aggressive play at times within the laws of the game, but I thought that was bang out. And obviously Greg Stewart's an idiot for what he's doing, but if there's any way to justify it, I can see his frustration with the kind of way that the boy just wasn't letting him run, because Greg Stewart's trying to make a run and the guy's blocking him off the ball and then grappling with him. It's inexcusable for Stewart to throw the head, but I can see why he's done it, just out of pure frustration, but he should know better.
Tom, in terms of Hamilton, they seem to be the kind of best of this bottom four that's splitting off at the moment. You can maybe say so. I think they're 2 points ahead of Motherwell at the moment, with Motherwell having a game in hand. They've already beaten St Mirren and Motherwell, who are below them in the opening 10 games. Do you think they are the best of that bottom four, and how do they find this consistency that's eluding them so far?
I think using the term best to be pernickety here is generous. They're probably the least worst.
Which is also the best.
Yeah, but that's why I said to be pernickety. Motherwell are in a sort of... Do they know exactly? They've maybe not got the players that they had last season to do what they did last season. St Mirren are absolutely woeful, and Dundee are worse, I think, worryingly. And at least Hamilton sort of have this sort of level of continuity that the particularly the bottom two don't have. And Motherwell seem to have lost in the last few months, which. And as I said, they probably don't have to be the best of the four. They just have to be, or just have not to be the worst this season. I think that's probably their aim. Just as bad as it'll be, just don't be worse than St Mirren and Dundee.
Yeah, it seems to be quite an easy task at the moment, not being worse than St Mirren. They've now lost, since Oran Kearney came in, they've lost, they drew Celtic in the first game and then lost five in a row. And another terrible defeat at St Johnstone at the weekend. Callum, have you got anything more to add about Kilmarnock? Obviously up to second in the league before we move on to St Johnstone and St Mirren and the Saints derby.
No, just to go over, I thought it was a very frustrating afternoon, and it felt like a 2 points dropped, no in regards to we deserved to win because we didn't, but just it was a great opportunity to get points on the board whilst all the kind of teams round about us had cup duties or weren't playing. But then the day we keep the run going, and to come from behind again, it's something we have to cut out, but at least we're not losing games. And to win four games and to take 13 points out of 15 is really remarkable, and a team in very good form, and as I say, I look forward to Ibrox on Wednesday night, where I'm confident we can definitely cause Rangers problems.
Right, with that we'll move on to the game at McDermott Park. St Johnstone 2, St Mirren 0. St Johnstone, as I said earlier in the show, managed to miss two penalties and still win the game comfortably. Motherspoon missed just on the hour mark. Tony Watt missed a penalty 3 minutes later. Craig missed a penalty 10 minutes after that. And Matty Kennedy tied the game up 10 minutes after that. And it really is, as you say before, Tom, St Mirren seemed to be in just... I don't even know. I think it's maybe something similar to Falkirk, where they've just signed so many players and way too many players that can't, they just are either not good enough or can't gel together at all, and they've replaced the manager and he can't find any success either really at all. And they are somehow still not bottom of the league, because Dundee are in the league. It really is going to be a dogfight, and St Mirren will be there the whole way, won't they?
I think so. See a lot of fans on Twitter, St Mirren fans anyway, saying they just need to get to January and then they can strengthen. And I know you're a big fan, Casey, of Simon Jackson, but I wouldn't be too enthused if these were the players that Kearney goes for, because I think there's an argument to be had that Jackson and Hamill are probably from the same sort of talent pool, if you will, that they are relatively well known, but they don't reek of an in-depth scouting system or a sort of long-term plan.
And yeah, definitely.
I think if you're a St Mirren fan, a long-term plan is probably not the first thing in your mind, given you've got, what, 5 points? 4 points after 10 games, but they do reek a wee bit of panic buys, and I hate to say this, but it is somewhat reminiscent, and Dundee even more so, in the way they're playing, but in terms of St Mirren signings, who I haven't actually seen too much of the season, but they are just a wee bit reminiscent of the United team that went down a few years ago, just signing these duds on reputation. Yeah. And I understand Jackson's been fairly lively, but I would be a wee bit fearful and not too full of hope that Kearney will turn it around through purely his transfers anyway.
I'm just having a look through the team there, and it doesn't seem... A few of the players that were actually there last season, which is more than you can say for Falkirk, the team that I've been watching this year. Players from Southampton's 23s, Barnsley, the two McGinns, Sampson, Hodgson. You know, there's Jack Baird as well. You know, there's a reasonable bit of... You know, a couple of players that were there last season, a couple of players, but... experience in this country, so maybe it's not completely the same as Falkirk that I mentioned earlier, but this sort of scouting system, it can go both ways, and we've seen it work wonders at Motherwell in the past, and it worked okay for Ross County as well. Ross County scout obviously went to Falkirk and it was a complete disaster, and Callum, you've seen what can happen as well, signing what, 7 players in a day or something under Lee Clark, and
11
in one day.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And oh, the full ship, the full thing was embarrassing that day. It was even the the way they were announced. They were all presented in front of the media, and you all know my kind of the kind of stick that I've given the kind of command on social media and stuff in the past, and their names were written on like a piece of paper and folded in front of them, which spelled incorrectly, and that just reeked to gross incompetence. By just to that, I mean, to be a da and dinosaur here, you can't buy experience, and that's a main thing. A lot of these guys that are brought in, it's all right, one or two guys here and there, and try to find these gems, but so many of these boys that have been signed for clubs in England, they've not even played 100 games, you know what I mean? Like, it's you need, like, you learn everything by being on the park. I mean, it doesn't matter if you've come through at whatever club in England, even if it's Man United's and stuff, like, you learn more playing competitive football than you do anything else, 100%. And a lot of these guys that they're signing, they're coming, they've got no connection to the clubs. They're just up here to try and get experience for themselves, and it's never working, and they're quickly forgotten about. Obviously, a few of the boys that someone brought in and won are already way back down the road. And it's just, it's frustrating, but I think the main thing for me that I picked up was, even though I'm saying that about the experience, see the experienced boys in that team, the couple that there is, they're not pulling their weight. I thought Samson obviously had a good game, and we spoke about before we came on air. That's the most Craig Samson, that part of my Craig Samson's career there. I mean, the guy has a blinder of a game for once in a few games, and they still get beat, you know what I mean? It's not much luck, but I mean, Paul McGinn at right back, see for that goal, the first goal, that's absolutely embarrassing defending. He's just no interested. That is your experienced guy, experienced fullback, and he's ball watching, and then he lets the ball basically run through his legs for Witherspoon to just come in and knock it past the keeper. It's just a helpless Samson. Sorry, that's just it's embarrassing. It's guys similar to Dundee last week. They just they're only hungry. They don't want to win headers. They don't want to put in tackles. You can expect that for these boys coming up down south that have got no connection to the club, but that's a guy, Paul McGinn, who's might have experience and a connection to St Mirren, and that was just embarrassing. Like, I just thought just simple things like that is get guys that have been lazy and know what to do their shift, because when you're in that position at the table, you need to do the simple things, simple as that. You make every game a battle, and you win your individual battles, and he certainly wasn't doing that, and it was just total complacency, and I really do fear for someone. When you said you were going through their team, I get the fear reading their team. There's a severe lack of talent in there. I think Simeon Jackson's a decent signing and stuff, but I just a lot of these boys, they're no good. They're no good enough for this level.
How many of the players that came up in the summer are actually away?
Is it two?
Two
in the last week. The boy Coulson from Middlesbrough is away back then, who I actually thought was alright against us when they played us at the Betfred Cup. Thought he was actually one of the better players in the park, but he's quite a fade away, and it was somebody else. But
Brock Madsen,
that's away back then.
Was it Brock Madsen? Jesus Christ, I remember asking Ryan when I last hosted, I think maybe the last time I hosted the podcast, I think he made his debut at Ibrox, Brock Madsen. I said to him, is he the answer to St Mirren's striking problems? And the answer is in October, and it's no. So Brock Madsen will probably never kick another Scottish football in his life. On the other side of the Saints derby, which I'm now referring to this as, by the way, St Johnston are just kind of being St Johnston. They're going to finish in 8th place, aren't they? It's just that will happen. They're actually above Aberdeen now. Up into 7th in the table, and you know, after a little bit of a early season worry, they do look very comfortable, don't they, Cam?
No, definitely. I think that the turnaround to how they started the season, just even that first game against Kilmarnock, I feared for them a bit, but they're definitely starting to come into it and playing some good stuff. And I know he didn't have his best game on Saturday, but Tony Watt, he will have a really good season there, and great to see Matty Kennedy getting a goal as well, as a boy that's no doubt get talent and a lot to offer if he's just at the right club and the right manager, which I think he is at this moment in time with St Johnstone.
We'll move on to the Championship, and we'll start with the least worst team in the Championship, and that's Ross County. They won 5-0, and they are just absolutely on fire, Ross County. 5-0 winning against a Morton side that have taken a few pacings, actually, under Jonathan Johansson. I said at the start of the season Ross County would win this league. Callum, you laughed at me. Are you laughing now?
No, I am not laughing. I don't know. Well, this is coming from the guy, for me, who tipped Dunfermline to win the league, and look at me, pathetic there. So I should never know to question lower league football with Mr. Johnny Clark. But no, County, the resources and stuff, but you've got to give them credit for the other just bulldozing that way through the league they now. But United are hot, are no far behind them either, and I think the D United under Nielsen will start to come good, and I think Partick Thistle will eventually start putting her in together as well. But I reckon you're right, and I think probably Ross County, just with the resources and stuff and infrastructure there, I think they probably will end up winning the league.
The two managers.
There was some humble pie there.
Very honest. The two manager situation with Kettlewell and Ferguson, Tom, it doesn't seem to be a problem at all. You know, it seems to work well. I've been up to Ross County twice. Both times it's been Kettlewell, actually. It's just how it's worked out. But they take a week each, doing media duties, no matter how many games they have in the week. It's not a game each, it's a week each sort of thing. And that's obviously just from the media point of view. But you can see them both in the dugout, and they seem to work perfectly together, and they do have, as Callum said there, they do have a fantastic squad available to them as well. Do you see them as favourites comfortably?
Not comfortably favourites, no. Favourites, yes. I think it was McBoogie had them at 2-5 to win the league.
Mm. Oh god.
Which is a bit tight. I think they're absolutely brilliant position to do so. What is it? A point ahead of Ayr and 5 ahead of United, but I wouldn't say comfortable favourites, just because I do think there is something quite special happening at Tannadice at the moment.
Fantastic. Right, we'll move on to that then, since you're so desperate to talk about Dundee United's win at Dunfermline and the dawn of a new fantastic era at Tannadice. Let's go. No more tears. Only happiness.
No. And I do genuinely feel that I do believe in what I'm saying now. Unlike in the last year when the false dawns that Laszlo gave on very fleetingly. It does seem slightly different, and it is quite annoying. I was thinking about today that we did have a massive handicap and disadvantage at the start of the season in Laszlo, and it wasn't as if we're saying that from the benefit of hindsight. This is something everyone was crying out for. And pretty much 2 months into his reign, that this is someone who probably wasn't fit to take a side out of the championship. But already Nielsen has just got us look so much stronger, just sharper, almost just playing players where they should be playing. And this is coming from friend of the podcast and avid Dundee United fan, Matthew Robertson. He was saying just how good we look defensively, and Frederick Franz, particularly the former Partick centre half, just a massive step up on what we've had before, particularly last season. Dernan and Moshney, who we had last season, sort of had half of what you'd want from a defender each. Dernan was quite solid, but woeful anytime he had the ball, and pretty much the opposite for Moshney. Whereas Franz and Buhena, the two centre halves we've got at the moment, just so composed, and but they can actually defend as well, which is a massive bonus. And then at the other end of the pitch, it's Frankel, who just is really good. Only got him on loan, which is a wee bit annoying, but quite a nice wee gift that Laszlo's left. And behind him, you've got McMullen, King, and oh my goodness, we've got McMullen, King, and
oh dear,
so good I've forgotten his name. Fraser Aird, real Sim Shady with his blonde hair. At times, Laszlo was only playing one of them, and you're asking quite a lot for one of them to be on at every game. Whereas when you've got three of them, you can, one or two of them can have the day off, which, given they are Scottish Championship standard wingers, that is going to happen regularly enough. But when you've got all three of them, it is pretty hard for defences to cope for three players, three incredibly tricky players on their day, to handle. Whilst you did, you would rightly say count your favourites. I think if Nielsen can not massively revamp the squad, maybe just a couple of players here to get rid of some of the dross that Laszlo brought in, I think there's no reason why United can't push County all the way.
Well, you mentioned a couple of signings there and a couple of players that you obviously thought were decent, and then you said Laszlo's dross. Was it just a mixed bag then, you kind of think? Because he's obviously brought in a couple of decent players. Is there just a couple that are just a total waste of time and money?
Yeah. Curran, particularly, Craig Curran, striker, looks sort of no use. 3-year contract as well, which is probably the most worrying thing, and it'll be one of the highest, if not the highest, earner at the club.
See what's weird with that, Tom? Like, I think, just looking at it, see, Curran, It just strikes me though, like maybe I'm well off the mark here, but he just looks like exactly the same kind of striker that Nicky Clark is. Like, I don't know if that is a fair assessment or not. Like, that looks too like for me. Like, and Nicky Clark's not even starting now, you know what I mean?
That Nicky Clark's having problems with injury is the official word, but he doesn't look totally fit. And that'll presumably come under Nielsen, who has already got the players looking a lot fitter, particularly the midfield two and Fabian Stanton, two of the best players in the division.
That's what, because I like Nicky Clark, I think he's a good striker, but I've always rated Curran as well, but I thought they were kind of similar types, like good in the air, but they're good with their feet, like finishing left foot, right foot, it's not what they're both target men. I think Nicky Clark can maybe get about the pitch a bit more, but I think that does, just for the outside looking in, kind of epitomise Laszlo's kind of signings. It's just, in the main thing that I've picked up for you, and you kind of dwelled on it there a wee bit, is that Nielsen's actually playing players in their positions. But you know, saying there was a situation ever on the season where he was playing a right back at centre mid and a centre mid at right back or something.
Yeah, just a bit of a theme that, and already players are starting to look a lot better, like Stuart Murdoch, who was no use under Laszlo, and sort of a standard enough player who would do his job in centre midfield under McKinnon, looked like a decent enough player, and then has since been a right back, centre half, and a holding midfielder, and already he looks like a decent enough right back, which, given I was more than happy for him to leave, is just a bonus really. As for the two strikers, I think Clark's more of an obvious threat. Sort of with his goal against Dunfermline, he sort of knows where to be. Whereas Curran, he's very hard working without really doing a lot. He'll run and sort of harry a defender when he's got no chance. And then when there is half a chance going, he's nowhere to be seen. And he's almost looked better playing out wide, despite having none of the physical attributes to be a winger. Particularly in this team we've got now, the three wingers that started, or the three attacking midfielders that started on Saturday and have done since Nielsen's come in, are the sort of wingers that Nielsen clearly likes. Whereas I do think Curran will hopefully be one of the players to be moved on, but it'll be pretty tricky to do so given he's on such a big contract.
Yep, and that is plenty Dundee United for the podcast, Tom. Thank you. Thank you for being happy about Dundee United for once. For the first time, I think, in your podcast era, I think this is the first time you've been pleased. So I think the listeners will be delighted for you, and we're all very happy that the Dundee United are no longer terrible. But you did not mention in your title race predictions Ayr United, which is a shame because Ayr United are absolutely on fire. That's them beat Park Thistle. I think I'm renting for the third time this season without conceding a goal. That's a great win. Nearly 1,000 Ayr fans at Firhill as well, which is very decent travel and support for them, considering that's more than the home crowds they were getting just a couple of years ago. Certainly when I started living in Ayr. Remember a game against Stenhousemuir, the crowd was below 700, 650 or maybe even a bit less. So it just shows how far they've come under Ian McCall. And they've got a home game against Aloe in the week, and I think they've won every home game so far this season, so they expect them to win that and just kick on. How far can this team go? Tom, you didn't mention them in your title predictions.
Yeah, they are obviously a very, very good team with a few very good players, particularly really like Shanklin. I don't think that's any secret or massive discovery that I've just made there. And if they can win games without him playing well, then that is the mark of a good team. Sorry to have just said the last two sentences in absolute cliches, but I think they've probably going down and coming back again has sort of stood them in good stead this season, and they've got the added benefit this year of not having a massive team to compete against, or a massive team that's well run to compete against, should I say. With obviously, and yeah, they probably are or are in with as good a chance as United, if not better, given 4 points ahead, game in hand, which is really good. And I'm probably doing them a massive disservice by not including them in what, my previous statement, but maybe just the expectation is that they fall down, but that didn't happen with Livingston last year, and there's no reason why you can't do it either.
You mentioned there, Ayr getting results without the top player scoring, and that's exactly what Queen of the South did against Falkirk at the weekend, and that's the second game in a row they've won without Stephen Dobby scoring for them, and that's two clean sheets and a bounce as well. Queens are right back in the mix, and as I say there, without Dobby, obviously going back, I mean, the game before that, Dobby scored a hat-trick, having been 3-0 down to Alloa, so you can't completely ignore how important he is, but that's them back up into the playoffs. Can Queens stick it out up that end of the table, Callum? You've seen them this season.
Yeah, I absolutely don't see why not, Johnny. I mean, when I went down, obviously seen them against United, they were brilliant that day. As much as a class act Dobby was, but the quality all over my pitch. I mean Gary Harkins can still comfortably play a very, very good level. Albeit I'm not sure if he actually played on Saturday, but it just shows the kind of strength and depth they've got. I think Andy Stirling, quality player. But the big boy, Lyndon Dykes, up front, I think he is a very, very, very good player. He links well with Dobby. Big, tall guy, wins headers, but he's very good with the ball in the deck as well. I think that was a very, very good professional win for Queens, considering the position Falkirk are in. It's always just one of those that you never know, and you're always waiting in Falkirk to get that massive result with the kind of bounce of bringing in Ray McKinnon, but it's not really happened yet. And for them to concede the goals when they did is a real sucker punch. Obviously going down to Palmerston and getting 0-0 at half time's alright, but to concede two goals basically directly after half time's always got to be a sickener, and there's no many teams are going to come back for that position.
You mentioned Falkirk there, they're looking for that McKinnon bounce. I mean, they're still looking for a lot of things, including their first goal at home this season. They've got Ross County on Tuesday, and I am seriously worried for them.
To score 5 goals in 10 games is just... That's horrendous.
Yeah, well, one was a 90th minute consolation at Partick Thistle. Two came in a 3-2 when they were 2-0 up against Ayr. And the other ones were against Alloa and a 2-0 win, which has represented their only points so far this season, and they've not beaten a full-time team since April. The list of things that you can say about Falkirk just goes on, and I seen them, Dobby against them, obviously scored a hat-trick that day as well. Could have scored 6 or 7, that's being completely fair. It's not one of those ones where, oh, he had 5 shots, and I'll say he should have scored 7. He genuinely could have scored 7 that day. It could have been double figures, was the quote that Aaron Muirhead, Falkirk captain, said after the game as well. And Queen of South manager Gary Naismith said exactly the same thing. So in terms of Falkirk, I think it's impossible to see where it improves. As I say, they've not scored a goal at home in the league. They lost at home to Connors Quay 1-0 as well, and lost at home to Montrose. That's just the level that they're at. And speaking to a Falkirk fan earlier on in the day, right, well, I'll just get this quote up here. It just kind of summed it up succinctly for me. I think we need 8 new players. A goalkeeper, a centre-back, a right-back, a centre-mid, a left-winger, a right-winger, and 2 strikers. So there's really just nobody getting off here. There's no depth, there's no quality in that squad. McKinnon, every time I spoke to him, and I think every interview I've watched with him since, he just mentions January. We need to grind until January. It was the first thing he told me when he joined, and that he's not wrong. It's ugly. It's very ugly.
They will, and that's the thing, Johnny. I mean, the best they can hope for now is just to, and it's a sad, sad state of affairs for Falkirk, but to keep in touching distance with Alloa, because the Falkirk board will back him in January, and they will sign players and good players at that level, but it's a sorry state of affairs when yep. you're saying that they've got to just hang on until January. I mean, this is Falkirk. This is a club that could have and arguably should have been promoted a couple of was once in the last 5-6 years. Now they're lingering at the bottom of the championship. I mean, and you can't see a win coming for anyone.
Yeah, and you mentioned St Mirren sent two players back. Falkirk signed 17 or was it 18? I can never remember if it's 17 or 18, I've forgotten now. Five of them are gone already. Four of them were gone at the start of October, and one joined this week as well. I would not be surprised if there was maximum of 6 or 7 left from those 17 at the end of January. It's
just Hartley. I cannot believe what he was doing. Like, how could he ever think that was going to be a success? It's just so messy. And
a guy
of that experience should know better. Should know a hell of a lot better. And he has got to be responsible for if Falkirk do come good in, because I mean, to leave them in that mess. I mean, and that's what we're saying. All McKinnon can do is hold on and stay within touching distance until January. And even then, he'll not get his stamp in his team until the summer. You know what I mean? Like, it's horrendous. And if I was a Falkirk fan, I would be seething at the people running the club and just what they allowed Hartley to do, because it's just an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, well, the next couple of games for Falkirk, Ross County at home and then Ayr at home, and then they go into Dunfermline away before they play Partick Thistle at home. Thistle have got no points away, Falkirk have none at home. That might be changed by then, but it doesn't look like it's going to get any easier. And we've got an Alloa team that are 5 points behind now, who are on a very decent run of form. You know, they're the part-time team in the league. Everyone expects them to be down there, but they're doing okay in a 0-0 draw with Inverness, who draw 0-0 way too often. 7 draws out of 10 for Inverness this season as well. Which is 7 draws out of 10, and I mean that 4 0-0s. Yeah. The last 5.
The worst invincibles ever, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, the last 5, 0-0, 0-0, 1-1, 1-1, 0-0. So, but yeah, they do remain undefeated in the league. And they've only conceded 6 from 10 games, despite them drawing 7. So, you know, maybe not the most exciting place to go and watch your football, but consistency is key in the Championship, you could argue. Anyway, we'll move on to League One. A league of firsts. Still, Stenhousemuir got their first away point of the season. Away points of the season, they won 1-0 at Airdrie, which is a fantastic result for them. Montrose won as well. They remain bottom though. And there's only 4 points between 4th and 10th. It's going to be a league where there's barely, you know, League 1 looking at it. It doesn't look like there's a relegation battle, you know, if that's even possible. It just looks like a midfield battle, and then whoever comes bottom of the midfield battle kind of gets relegated. It's a weird one. Who do you see sort of falling away in that league, if anybody, Tom?
I'm not sure about falling away. I'd imagine Dumbarton are probably in a wee bit of a false position given the quality they've got throughout their squad. Look at that team on Saturday, and obviously Jim Duffy in charge now. You'd imagine he wouldn't have taken that job if he felt he was going to have to battle down at the bottom of the league for the majority of the season. You think he's probably got visions of taking that squad into the playoffs at least. Ross Forbes, Cam Gallagher, really good players. I think Forbes was playing at left back on Saturday, which is an odd one given he's one of the better players in the league. But I'd imagine they'll probably get on top of that midfield battle, as you called it.
And the bottom three all won. Like, the bottom three as it stands now all won on Saturday. So Montrose won 3-1, Dumbarton won 4-0, and Stenhousemuir won 1-0 at Airdrie. And 5th, 6th and 7th all lost. So if it was close before, it's now even closer. And 4th are into the playoffs, and they were pretty much bottom a couple of weeks ago. They've beaten Raith Rovers at the weekend, the first team to beat Raith Rovers this season. And Arbroath, incredibly, 7 points ahead at the top of the league. Dick Campbell on fire at Arbroath. We listen to Danny Denholm and read his blogs and stuff, so he gives a bit of a decent insight into what it's like under Dick Campbell. But it's an enigma. Take Arbroath to the championship. Is that possible, Callum?
I mean, all they have to do is kind of look at clubs like, obviously, Brechin been able to kind of make the jump in the last couple of years. It's well respect to them.
Make the jumps, maybe pushing it a little bit.
They never ever really had the infrastructure or whatever to get there. But no, it just shows you it's a pure experience. Sorry, Dick Campbell. It's just like it's just one of those guys that just when I heard you just say his name, I was just laughing at him. I just think he's just a legend. He's just everything about him. He's genius, but no credit when it's due. Credit when it's due, and they've been quality this season. Obviously, 8 wins, and as you say, to be 7 points clear at this stage in the season, and when you're up against Raith Rovers and Airdrie's and stuff, obviously I know Airdrie are, you know, never really kind of live up to the hype every year, but particularly Raith Rovers, John McGlynn been there and all, you know what I mean, that's it's a big club, and like, the potential there, so no, absolutely brilliant for Arbroath. But I think definitely, as Tom said, Dumbarton are in a false position now, and I think the minimum for the playoffs for them, I think that with Jim Duffy being there, I think they'll show it. Because, I mean, obviously they know, I mean, they're only, what, 4 points or whatever off the playoffs.
Yeah,
it just shows how tight the league is. And the only evident gap in the league is at the top, we are Bro 7 Cleary Wraith.
Well, I think East Fife's loss to Dumbarton 4-0 at the weekend was their first. They'd won 8 in a row before that. And they're still only third, and they're still not even that far off the bottom. It's just, is it 11 points from 11 games is bottom of the league?
Mental though, that's crazy.
That's one of the tightest leagues you'll see. About, as always, the bottom two leagues are always the same in Scotland, but whilst there might not be any teams sort of deserving of relegation so far anyway, in League 1 there's certainly a few deserving of promotion from League 2. Edinburgh City and Peterhead are providing some title race so far. Edinburgh have won 9 out of 10 in the league. Another win at Stirling at the weekend. And Peterhead, with the result of League 2 at the weekend, winning 3-1 away at Clyde. Does that kind of not rule Clyde out, but it's a huge marker, isn't it, for Jim McAnally's Peterhead, Tom?
Yeah, a massive marker. You look at this as probably being, I don't know, if it's getting relegation 6-pointers, but imagine if Clyde would have taken the points here, it might be more of a sort of bringing Peterhead into a sort of promotion race. Obviously, it is only 10 games in, and you don't want to start speaking and cutting teams off and putting them in a box and saying that they're not going to challenge the title, they're going to be in promotion, relegation, etc, etc. But yeah, massive statement intent from Peterhead, especially when you've got a team as wholly complete as Edinburgh City are. It is quite important that Peterhead do just keep winning, because I'd imagine that's what Edinburgh City are going to be doing for the majority of this season.
Yeah, I've read the back page of one of the Johnson Press's papers. Buchan Observer obviously does, that's Peterhead. And it was Jim McAnally basically saying 22 points from 9 games is just not good enough. You know, that's the level that Edinburgh City are up to. They've won 12 matches in a row, Callum, and they've got some fantastic players. Obviously, Balotone, who you'll know well, Scotty Shepherd, Blair Henderson, who was so prolific. He's been so prolific around League 2 for so many years.
No, definitely. It feels like we're just repeating it week in, week out. But it just is. It's the Edinburgh City have shown ambition this year. And it was always got to be, when they made it up into the professional league, it was always got to be a case of first year or two, just sit, you know what I mean? But I think they've already made more progress than they thought they would. Because the last couple of years, I thought they were, despite how poor Cowdenbeath were, that they were always kind of certainty to be to finish 9th or 10th, but I mean, for them to be in this position already, this season's absolutely ridiculous. Who's their only loss to? Was it? Do you have that handy?
Yeah, their only loss was to Elgin away.
To Elgin?
The notoriously difficult place to go, of course, Elgin, despite them losing at home again on Saturday.
Exactly, I was going to say, I actually back Elgin at home every single week because I've just got it in my head that it's a tough place to go. Especially with Annan getting up there, but obviously the longest trip in the kind of structure, surely, in Scotland at this moment in time. Annan going to Elgin, or maybe that's just a lie. But
Berwick, maybe, I'm not sure actually which is further. Annan probably is further, actually.
I'd say so, I'd say that it probably was. But no, Edinburgh City, they're reaping the rewards for showing a bit of ambition. And Peterhead, it's just one of those again that, I mean, in any other year, that's a brilliant start, but with the money that they've got behind them and that, they have to get promotion this year. They've got to. Or McInally will have his jotters come January or whatever, if they're not top of the league, because they can't just, despite how well Edinburgh have done this year, I mean, Peterhead, really, with the money that's behind them, they should be in League One minimum.
Yeah, you mentioned Elgin and Annan there. Annan were very happy when they got back at 3 in the morning from Boro Briggs with their 3 points. They move up to third place. One of my mates I was speaking to today at the pub was at the game, and he said he was just completely flabbergasted when Elgin were 1-0 down searching for a goal. They took on Craig Beattie up front, who he described as being not fit for purpose in the Highland League. Never mind League 2, he's apparently piled on a few pounds. He was actually playing centre-half for Elgin at some points last season.
Oh, you're joking.
Not on Saturday, but he was playing centre-half for Elgin at some points last season. So, not sure what's going on there.
That is disgusting. That is absolutely mine.
I'm pretty speechless of that myself, to be fair. Elgin, of course, are fifth. I mean, they finish fifth every single year. They'll give a kind of fake promotion push, and then they'll just finish fifth or sixth. Queen's Park are just behind Elgin. They've beaten Albion 3-0 away from home. Albion, it's really bleak for them. Knocked out the cup by Fermartin last weekend, and they followed up with a 3-0 home reverse to Queen's Park. And the last game, Berwick Rangers, my new team, 3-0 home loss to Cowdenbeath, and not just that, but 3 red cards as well for Berwick. It's a big job for Johnny Harvey going there from Pennycook, his first job in the SPFL, and it really can't be much harder. I think Berwick are just seriously lacking funds. Speaking to the outgoing manager, he said that, you know, they couldn't compete with junior teams for players in terms of money.
Jesus.
And you know, there's teams like Cowdenbeath have got far more money than them. I think he said, wasn't Bowness, Bonnie Rig Rose. He used to manage Bonnie Rig Rose as well. And he just said that the cash they had was impossible to compete with once you have to add in, obviously, I'm going down to Berwick all the time, because most of the players are obviously staying in Edinburgh, etc. It's almost impossible to attract players. So I think that'll be a difficult one for Berwick. Anyway, we'll move on to questions, if I can get some questions. I think there was actually some sensible questions that came in this week. Callum, your friend asked a couple of questions. I believe his nickname is Pissy. I'm not going to ask anything about the... How many questions have we had? Oh, it's just Fisher being a clown, right? How many tickets should Aberdeen be allocated for the final is the first question. They had, was it 10,000 today?
Yeah. I reckon that they'll sell their 18,000 or whatever that they'll...
Mm-hmm.
They probably should be getting anyway, minimum.
Well, you look back at old League Cup finals, don't you, rather than the semi-final?
Yeah, it's just, this one was always going to be strange. It was just the whole setup and stuff, but I think that the minimum that they should get is 18,000, and I think they would sell that no problem for the final.
Tom?
Well, there's two arguments, given 50-50, and then sort of cut it down if needs be, if not, given it is a final, but there's also the other side that you could just punish them for. I say punish them, well, maybe a bit strengthened that they didn't, or just give them what they take for a semi-final and encourage people to take tickets in the earlier stages. But I don't know, 18,000 is probably fair.
Next question. There was 5 away wins in League 2 this weekend. What the fuck? Yeah, there was all 5 away teams in League 2. 1, Edinburgh, Peterhead and Queen's Park were favourites to win. Cowdenbeath and Annan were not favourites. Certainly not with the bookies anyway. I know somebody that used to bet every single weekend on away teams in Scottish League 2. This was just how he bet, because he believed that there was no difference being home or away at that level of football, and that the bookies always favoured the home teams. You know, look at Elgin Annan. They went into the game both on 16 points, yet Annan were 21-10 and Elgin were just above evens. So his theory that there's an absolutely no... that Elgin is just simply not a difficult place to go, and there's no advantage to being at home, so just back the team that's the better price. So there you go, that's how you should bet. That kind of answered your question, maybe. Kind of. Try to get through who is the biggest baby of the podcast. That has been answered, I believe, by Fisher's actions tonight.
I would like to know what Fisher's asked.
He didn't ask, he just told me to fuck off when I asked for questions. So
told you to fuck off, or...
Yes, me personally, podcast. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, right, okay, that's probably fair enough.
Well, he said the podcast, and then he found out it was me, and then he told me to fuck off. It all got quite ugly. Biggest smash and grab in Scottish football history. That is a question. I'm not sure if this is... It's an Aberdeen fan, by the looks of it, or somebody that lives in Aberdeen, John McNabb, who's asked this. I'm not sure if he's referring to the Aberdeen game or just asking... What is the biggest
smash grab ever? Years ago, when Ryan Dodds played with Kerry FM, he remembers him, Canadian boy, and we beat Motherwell at Fir Park 1-0, and we were absolutely murdered all day, but Ryan Dodds got the last minute to go and beat them 1-0, and they announced it over the tannoy as scorer for Kilmarnock, number 16, Dick Turpin, who of course was the medieval robber throughout the... No, medieval, sorry, like the... don't know, 18th century or whatever. So,
that's so pathetic.
It's just that it's quite funny. So I'd say that was definitely a smash and grab, but I think I've seen a few in my day, but I'm trying to think of kind of more recent ones, but none are kind of coming to mind.
2008 League Cup final. Oh. United Rangers.
That certainly wasn't a smash and grab. That was a Mark Kerr leaving his house open, man, and his front door open at 1 o'clock in the morning with the lights on. Off. I don't know. Off, maybe. Aye. So you have no one else to blame for that except for Mark Kerr, Tom, and don't.
Oh, believe me, Callum, I know.
It actually really annoys me, because I remember watching that and really wanting the United to win, and just him slapping Chris Boyd through, man. He could have done anything there except for that, and they wouldn't have scored him. It must be murder to be you, thinking about that at all.
Still brings a tear to my eye for the day.
Question from Russell Abercrombie. Getting into a bit of a Halloween spirit. We see, is Martin Canning doing pound for pound best job in the Premiership? I'll answer that with 2 words. Craig Levein. You guys?
Oh my god.
Stephen Clark, surely.
I think that just when you look, obviously, Steve Clark's the best manager in Scotland, so there's no doubt about that. But I think Canning, me and Russell Abercrombie actually had a conversation about this on Twitter, and just based on what I said earlier, I think that they deserve credit for what they get. A lot of people stick the boot in, but for him to keep... you never know what's going to happen this season, but they always find a way. They always know how to get results when they need them. And for that guy to have that shoestring budget he's got and no financial backing, especially when they're dishing out £700,000 to Nigerians over the phone or whatever. and I know mean this to have a go, but they've got no fans coming in the gate either, really. Like, I think he does a brilliant job. I really do. They're horrible to play against, but seeing you have a decent team, I think that is. Like, Aki's fans have always said they'd be careful what they wish for if Canning goes, because I don't think that, like, particularly with what he's got to work with, I don't think there's many people who do a better job there than he would.
And the same questioner, is that the word? Who will win the first Ayrshire derby of next season?
There's no doubt about that.
Dumb.
There will be no Ayrshire derby next season.
Come on, it got relegated.
That would be interesting. Nah, unfortunately, there'll be no Ayrshire derby next season.
Tom?
I'll say Ayr will win it in the Scottish Cup final next season.
Oh my god. That certainly couldn't happen.
On a lighter note, is Barry Ferguson curled over a toilet with his fingers down his throat? Asks Ryan Crombie.
I'd really, the last thing I want to think about is what Barry Ferguson's doing at this moment in time. I don't know, he'll be seething anyway, I know that much. Probably deleting his nephew's number for his phone and stuff as we speak.
Or will he be celebrating Kelty Hearts' first win of his reign, 2-0 at the weekend? No, he probably doesn't care. Okay. One from Jan Spans. Tom, are Rangers the new Hibs? Well, you can't, he's not waiting forever to find out here, Tom.
I didn't really believe in Hibs too much. I'd imagine Rangers will come good, so I don't think they'll Rangers it or Hibs it this season.
Jersed it.
Yeah, it's better. Rolls off the tongue a wee bit nicer.
I think we have one last. We've got one from Lord O'Connor. Hearts goaltending. ... Question mark.
That's what?
Goaltending. The question there, Lord O'Connor, is why you used the word tending.
Yes. Actually, I don't know what Lord O'Connor means there.
He's obviously talking about his Lamal.
Oh.
Right. terrible. Terrible goalkeeper.
And the last question, which is more tin pot, Matt Finlay's team or Matt Finlay's camera skills? Matt Finlay's team, of course, Aberdeen. There's nothing tin pot about reaching the League Cup final, so I'm going to say it's camera skills. Tom?
Yes, camera skills.
Camera skills.
Mm-hmm. Seconded.
Thirded, fantastic. Right, that rounds us up nicely, boys. Thank you, Tom McKinnon.
Yes, it's been thoroughly enjoyable to speak about Dundee United winning a game.
And thank you, Kilmarnock Callum.
Thank you, Johnny.
We'll be back next Monday, in your ears, talking Scottish football for the 228th time. Until then, good night.